It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're keeping one eye on the Olympics tonight because we're kind of in a position. I just feel like I'm getting addicted to it after two or three days of watching swimming. Although I feel, I will be honest, I said this earlier, I feel like the graphics could be better. I need more, I need more like the gold medal is on the head of the swimmer who's in first place. So I know who's winning. Like half the time they put the yellow line for the world record. And then they kind of just, you just kind of have to listen to the two broadcasters and just guess which guy hit the thing for, I don't know. I just feel like they could do a lot more. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Molly Green's going to join us. She's going to fan jam the Olympics tonight. She watched the entire prime time schedule tonight, so we didn't have to. And we could do a show, and we're going to talk to her about what we missed. What were the good moments? What were the bad moments? What were the funny moments? What were the broadcast moments? How many divers took showers? That's all they were doing for the first hour was diver showers. NBC5, Bob Costas with the diver showers. A new book goes inside one of the best literary stories of our area. That's right, the birthplace of writer Ernest Hemingway. The book is called Hidden Hemingway, and it really curates some of the great pieces in the Hemingway archives that are in Oak Park, Illinois. Robert K. Elder, Aaron Vetch, and Mark Chirino put the book together. And Rob Elder's in studio with me tonight. Rob, good to see you.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for having me.
How you doing? And congrats on the book.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
This is really great. So it's Hidden Hemingway inside the Ernest Hemingway Archives of Oak Park. What moved you to write this book or put it together?
Well, I had been sort of the editor-in-chief of a chain of newspapers, the Pioneer Press, and it was not very well known, so we sort of sorted it out, but Ernest Hemingway had been rumored to write for one of those newspapers, the Oak Leaves in Oak Park. So I took a little bit of time and discovered, no, he did not write for the Oak Leaves, but he delivered it as a teen. And so that sort of led me down this rabbit hole, and we did a special section in the Oak Leaves, and then I talked to the executive director of the Ernest Hemingway Foundation in Oak Park, a guy named John Berry, and I said, why isn't there a book about this stuff? There's amazing stuff here. It's his entire life story told in objects. Why isn't there a book? Fast forward to 3 years later, and here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there, obviously, a lot of tourism comes through Oak Park for Ernest Hemingway, but there's something that I think the area knows there's an Ernest Hemingway connection to somewhere, and Oak Park is the place. But you know, I was talking to Pete before the show that I feel like that's the extent of it. Like, for me, I'm like, oh, yeah, Ernest Hemingway. I think Oak Park. Okay.
Yeah.
That's about it. That's all I know.
I think some of that is because he's overshadowed by Frank Lloyd Wright. So there are a ton of Frank Lloyd Wright houses in Chicago, in Oak Park. The other part of it is, you know, there are a few famous figures from Oak Park. So it's Frank Lloyd Wright, Edgar Rice Burroughs, who did Tarzan, and John Carter of Mars, Hemingway, and then Kathy Griffith. So
that must be what it is.
Yeah, it's all. So, you know, for Frank Lloyd Wright, it's easy to go and see his houses and the tours there. I think Ernest Hemingway, he has his own museum. There are three houses, actually, that he lived in. And again, it's this sort of like rich history. His high school there. He was born and graduated high school with his twin, quote unquote, sister, Marceline. His whole adolescence is Oak Park based.
How, for you as a writer, I mean, obviously you sort of how the book came together, but how much when you started, how much did you know, and how much did the book make you say, oh, I didn't know anything?
Sure. Well, I go on the advice of a friend who says basically, you write the book to become the expert, not because you are the expert. And I'm, at this point, I'm not saying I'm an expert, but I know an awful lot. And, you know, I spent a couple of years, I read all of his stuff in order. So I have a pretty deep appreciation for the work, especially the short stories. I know a lot of biography.
Well, I mean, again, and I'm ashamed to say that I'm not much of an Ernest Hemingway guy, meaning I know Old Man and the Sea, but it's not something that I've spent a lot of time with. And because of reading this, I feel like I want to, because I want to know more. How particular or how vast was Oak Park as a character in Ernest Hemingway's work? Did he refer back to some of his stories as a teen and as a kid?
You know, not much. It's actually hidden. Really? I mean, this is the other reason I think there's some confusion about, like, Oak Park, Hemingway, I'm not really sure. It's because he sort of protected Oak Park, but also he had a very complicated relationship with Oak Park. You know, his parents were not initially very supportive of his work. In fact, when A Sun Also Rises came out in the 1920s, his mother called it the filthiest book released this year.
It's a nice thing to put on the back cover.
Yeah. And they were mortified that he had used sort of the surnames of some of his school friends in some of the work. You know, he never came back to Oak Park after his father's suicide in the late 20s. And in fact, I think it was in Esquire, he wrote that he went back to Oak Park and visited, and his home wasn't even there anymore. You know, it was a hot dog stand, which is blatantly untrue.
It gives you a little bit understanding that he may have had not bad feelings, but at least feelings.
Well, complicated feelings, I think, about the family. I mean, there's a false quote that goes around all the time that allegedly Hemingway said that Oak Park was a place of wide lawns and narrow minds. But we debunk that. Like, you know, things he said and things he wrote, probably more documented than any other writer. So it's just blatantly false. Not to say he probably didn't, that sentiment probably wasn't there someplace, because he was breaking out of this, you know, conservative, uptight, you know, dry community.
So, I mean, it begs the question of Oak Park's, I mean, obviously Ernest Hemingway is one of the biggest writers of all time, but Oak Park has really created a cottage industry. There are archives, not just one, there are several in Oak Park. There are tours, I'm sure, that Hemingway
birthplace
turns
home,
birthplace home, that kind of stuff. Is that complicated in the way that Ernest Hemingway may not have looked back on his time at Oak Park? Did they mention that part when they're talking about the
tours? Yeah, I mean, I think they're pretty upfront about that. You know, his sort of literary alter ego is a character named Nick Adams. But even Nick Adams is more about Michigan, because he spent all of his summers in Michigan. So, no, they're pretty upfront with his complicated relationship with his family. You know, very famously among Hemingway scholars, you know, he had this love-hate relationship with his mother. And he, at one point, I think it was McCall's magazine, wanted to come and do a profile and said, oh, well, we'll go to your hometown, we'll interview your mother. And he said, don't you dare. If you even attempt that, I will not only stop cooperating with this profile, but I will cut this woman off. You will leave her financially destitute. He also warned his mother, do not talk to anybody. So
can you glean that to be protectionism, like he's trying to protect, or is it more that he doesn't want the stories or the connection between his family?
I think it's
family,
both. Yeah. I think it's both. I think he worked so hard to build this legend, this hyper-masculine papa. He didn't want people to know that, you know, until age two or three, you know, he was often dressed as a little girl, so he could pass literally as the twin sister of his older sister, Marceline. I mean, it was such a, an unusual family myth that Grace Hall Hemingway, his mother, held the sister back. She gave her an extra year of kindergarten so they could enter grade school together and graduate as twins.
Rob, I mean, we'll continue this conversation. We're going to get to hit the news here with Bob Kessler in just a moment. But, I mean, it is fascinating to know. I mean, and the book has got such great, and we'll get into this after the news.
Well, I was going to say, there's pictures of that, too, of him dressed as a little girl, a couple pictures of it. And in fact, on the back of one of them, Marceline, his sister, who wrote a book about the family called At the Hemingways, she wrote on the back saying, this picture did not make it into my book.
Yikes. Well, there's Hemingway's Oak Park. There's the guide, right? That's in your book about the different places. And I want to talk about those places, the birthplace and museum. There's a Hemingway museum. There's the elementary school that he went to. There's the cemetery. There's so many different things that have something to do with Hemingway's life. Mm-hmm. So it does feel like Oak Park has fully embraced Ernest Hemingway as theirs.
There's a Hemingway district. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing. But it is hard, because Frank Lloyd Wright's footprint literally is all over that town. What I tried to find, though, was, you know, they were not contemporaries. Frank Lloyd Wright would have been older and would have left actually with his mistress by the time Hemingway was a teen. But I couldn't find out if the men had ever met or if they had an opinion of one another.
Right, because they both would have shared the space. Right?
Yeah, and I think actually it's possible Hemingway delivered to his family home, the Oakleys. And I think in one of the drafts, Marceline Hemingway talks about attending a party at the Wright's house.
Because the Wrights would have been a big deal while he was delivering newspapers.
Well, he would have been a big deal, but also a source of shame. Like, he left Oak Park for the wife of a client. You know, it was a huge, huge scandal.
So maybe, yeah. Well, I also think that the through line, which we'll explore coming out here, the idea that this town has put so much, and it's a beautiful, beautiful town, and the history, to be able to embrace Ernest Hemingway and his life and have the reality that Ernest Hemingway was not either, and you can be disputed whether he's a fan of the town or didn't want that to be part of his history, is really interesting.
Yeah, well, he always protected it. He really did. In fact, he said, you know, in trap shooting vernacular, he said, "I always gave it a miss." So he never shot at Oak Park. So I think he was the same way with Michigan as well. Petoskey, all those northern towns. But a very complicated relationship. You know, he even joked that maybe his next book would be burned on the steps of the Oak Park Library. So very locally conscious.
All right, let's continue the conversation after the news here. The book is Hidden Hemingway, Inside the Ernest Hemingway Archives of Oak Park. Robert K. Elder's one of the authors. He's in studio with me. We'll be right back. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Olympics in the 10 o'clock hour tonight. No Studio 435. The band Varsity canceled on us tonight, which is a bummer. One of the singers is sick, so we're going to have no live music tonight, which, you know what, we'll give Bob Ferguson a break, although he's setting up for some stuff for Patty Vasquez. But at 10 o'clock, we'll fan jam the Olympics. If you guys want to, participate, let me know. 312-981-7200. If you saw something fun or exciting, or you thought that there was a part of the Olympics tonight that you want to talk about, let's do it in the 10 o'clock hour. We'll do that instead of the music. Sound good? 312-981-7200. Right now in studio with me, we continue the conversation about Hidden Hemingway, Inside the Ernest Hemingway Archives of Oak Park. Robert Elder is one of the co-authors of the book. He's in studio with me. You know, we talked about what, you know, there's not just one archive.
Right.
There's a couple archives in Oak Park. Working on this book and putting it together, which a lot of great sort of letters and pictures and all the stuff that's in here. What's in here? What did you grab from the Oak Park archives to put into this book?
Sure, sure. So what we wanted to do was have sort of a big, beautiful coffee table book, you know, a sort of a way to explain his life story through archives. So in order to do that, we had to go to a couple different places. So the big one, of course, is the Ernest Hemingway Foundation Archives of Oak Park. I'm saying that wrong. Ernest Hemingway Foundation of Oak Park Archives, which is on the third floor of the Oak Park Public Library.
Okay.
So that is a ton of stuff, including the papers of Marceline Hemingway, his sister. So there was also a collector named Waring Jones who collected a ton of stuff, like his book plates and wine cards and, you know, receipts. And Hemingway was a pack rat, so he left a lot of stuff behind. You know, some of the stuff...
That's good.
Yeah, you know, it's great for us, scholars, right? Yeah. The other thing, at the Historical Society of Oak Park in River Forest, Frank Lippo helped us out there. We actually found letters that Hemingway scholars didn't know existed. So we were able to, just in the process of this book, get those into the third volume of his collected letters.
Well, let me ask. I mean, there has to be, there are a lot of Hemingway scholars. There have been a lot of Hemingway stories and Hemingway history projects, books, and otherwise. Yeah. So how do you go about telling his story in a way that hasn't been told before?
Well, sometimes it's just for a new audience. And I think for this sort of social media savvy and photo savvy audience, it's a way to rediscover him. So maybe you didn't get him in high school, mm-hmm. and you're wondering again what the big deal is. People forget that, you know, his sort of minimalist writing was this avant-garde thing. You know, it wasn't lazy; it was a very tight thing. And then people would infer things into the story. They would bring themselves to the story. So that's one of the ways we did that. Yes, about the other archives. So there's some material at the high school, which we did not get access to, unfortunately. And then the library itself has a whole bunch of, let me see, like high school assignments and whatnot. Mm-hmm. They're things that are really, really interesting.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we found that we thought initially was a poetry assignment turns out to be a love letter. It's written, and I wrote about this for the Chicago Tribune. It turned out to be a woman named Annette DeVoe, and I tracked down her family, and it was really, really interesting because even though he's been written about, you know, so much, there are always new things to find. In this case, we get to debunk, for example, the fact that, you know, at least, you know, three or four of his high school contemporaries said, like, no, Ernest was not interested in girls at all. He was more interested in hunting and fishing.
Right, right. No high school girlfriend, that kind of thing.
Right, and so we found that not to be true and found this very, very passionate love note, you know, like your matchless grace, your, you know, your beauty, and this line, I'd gladly walk through hell with you or give my life. So it's, you know, that very weighty thing that happens when you fall in love in your teens.
Wow. And so that's stuff that the scholars have not seen. They just skipped over it because they didn't look in the right spot, or they thought it was a homework assignment or whatever.
Right. It was. I think it had been. Somebody reached out later and noted that it had been published in a scholarly journal, but no one ever looked up the family. And the family has been great. They're in Cleveland and L.A. and all over. And you know, there's a little bit of controversy about what the nature of their relationship was because it runs counter to the, you know, narrative of their parents or their grandparents and how they met. It was the first time we were able to sort of give a voice and a face to Annette.
It's really interesting. Hidden Hemingway inside the Ernest Hemingway Archives of Oak Park. What else do you have in the book? I mean, there's letters, there's photos. I mean, talk about some of the things that are that make this book possible. There's a lot of letters. I'm surprised that I mean, he's done a lot of writing back and forth.
Right, right. Well, I think it's Cambridge University Press. I think they're on the third volume of his collected letters, and I think it's projected at like 17 volumes, and these are thick books. So, you know, he wrote more letters than he wrote anything. So we found some undiscovered letters at the Historical Society. Oak Park also is home of the Agnes von Karowski letters. So the World War I nurse, his nurse that he fell in love with, who was the model for Catherine Barkley in A Farewell to Arms.
Okay.
So that's there. We also found a note that suggests that he had an affair with his sister-in-law.
Oh, no. Yeah. What was the... tell me about that.
Well, he was married four times, and we're talking about his second wife, Pauline Pfeiffer, with whom he had two children. And again, it's just this little note, and it's written on the back of a calling card. And it seems sort of innocuous. It says, you know, on the envelope, it says, Ernest Hemingway, please do not open until on board. And then you open it up and it says, just a little something to brighten the way, with love, Ginny. And I, you know, coming into this cold, I just thought Ginny was one of his paramours, you know, just somebody that he had a romantic connection mm-hmm. with or something. Mm-hmm. But the more I looked into it, it's a little too familiar. You know, the more we looked into it, we found that when he first met Pauline and Ginny, he met them together, and he was more attracted to Ginny, but he liked Pauline's fashion sense. So there's this quote where he said, I'd like to take her out, but in her sister's coat. And they had this really strong bond. He drank out of a flask he called his Ginny, J-I-N-N-Y, and he originally... dedicated Men Without Women, one of his short story collections, to her. And it was changed before publication. So there's a lot of untold stuff there. She had relationships with men and women. So that was certainly intriguing for him. But again, more to explore and more to find, just, you know, where you, as you keep digging. I always say that archives are this sort of special place where stories are waiting to be found.
For you, as a journalist and a longtime journalist here in town, I mean, a project like this, where you dig deep into an archive of a celebrity, essentially, mm-hmm. I mean, is it, is it the same kind of joy as working on an investigative piece, as a long form article for a magazine, that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, the sense of discovery is still there. You still get that juice. And I, if I can plug a friend's conference, I think it's in September. I'm actually talking about this, the Chicago Writers Conference. There's a website. Check it out. But I'm talking about this very thing because, you know, Eric Larson's Devil in the White City.
Yeah.
That story was around forever. You know, any newspaper, any magazine here could have done that. But he turned it into this riveting book, you know, about America's first serial killer and the World's Fair. So I think these stories are around us all the time. And all we have to do is just scratch beneath the surface just a little bit. I don't think people do that often enough.
It's fascinating because, like you said, I mean, we all kind of know it. We know the story that Ernest Hemingway, you know, was born and grew up in Oak Park, Illinois. Mm. And that story has been told. But as you dig into the archives, you're right. There's so many things in here that are kernels that you didn't know about that tell a whole different story than the one that I had in my mind.
Well, it helps you understand him better. You know, like the fact that he was raised as this twin and was dressed as a girl. Perhaps it was a charming Victorian custom, or maybe it was something creepy that his mother pushed. It helps you understand at least his hyper-masculinity. It puts it in a different light. There are always things you can discover.
You know, for you as on the other side, I mean, you have to, you know, sort of live, you know, eat, breathe, sleep, Ernest Hemingway. And you've been working on this for a while. This came out a couple weeks ago. Is there a point where you're just like, all right, I'm done with Ernest Hemingway?
Yeah, that was a couple weeks ago. but you know, the thing that is really interesting about this is as I go forward, more people come out and want to talk about him. And I discover new things all the time. And even the work, it helps me appreciate the work because I was sort of like you. I did not have a deep appreciation for the work. And now I have a fondness for Death in the Afternoon because it's him talking as an author, even though I think the bullfighting is abhorrent. It's not to my taste. For Whom the Bell Tolls is this amazing, weird little book that's written seemingly in Spanish but translated into English because it has the thee and the thou, and it's just weird, wonderful mashup. And then the short stories.
Yeah.
You know, there is a short story that I'm still sort of haunted by called The Sea Change. And it's a very, very short story, but it's about a man and a woman who are at a bar. And it's very, very clear that she is leaving him to have an affair with another woman. This was written in the 1920s. You know, and the way he writes about it and the way it's coded is so interesting, and it seems so modern. So it helps me see him in a different light and have exchanges like this.
All right. So the interesting thing, I mean, is people are texting in. You know, someone said, I think I used to live across the street from a Hemingway residence, 1226 North Dearborn. I mean, there Hemingway has a tremendous history, not only in Oak Park, but in Chicago. And that's a history that I don't know is necessarily mined for everything that's worth. There's still more, I guess, my point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if your folks are interested, I actually listed this. We have a Twitter account, at Hidden Hemingway, and it's on Facebook as well. Actually, the website is hiddenhemingway.com. I actually list all the places he lived in Chicago. So he lived, I think, at the Dearborn address with his wife Hadley when he was a correspondent for the Toronto Star. So, you know, he lived a bunch of places. Actually, I found out that when I was here as a Cub reporter, 15 years ago, I lived next door to a place where he had lived. Actually, the Zebra Lounge, you know, was it 1220 North State Street? He had lived right there. That was his block for a while. There's so much to be discovered. And again, to understand him in context.
Well, it's a great read, and you should check it out. Hidden Hemingway, Inside the Ernest Hemingway Archives of Oak Park. The authors are Robert Elder, Aaron Vetch, and Mark Chirino. Robert K. Elder in studio tonight. Rob, thanks so much. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
And good luck with the rest of the tour. You still got some tour dates on this, right?
We're busy for a whole year.
Have fun with that.
Thank you.